Tasmat Vamindriyanyadya.
Tasmat Vamindriyanyadya.
Niyamya Bharatarshabha.
Niyamya Bharatarshabha.
Papmanam Prajahityenam.
Papmanam Prajahityenam. Jnana vijnana nashanam. Tasmat tvam indriyani adau niyamya bharatarshabha papmanam prajahi hi enam jnana vijnana nashanam. So having spent these verses telling the pitfalls of kama, how kama, raga, dvesha really cover your ajnanam and as though steal your mind away, steal your buddhi away, and cause so much pain unnecessarily. And it's necessary for them, I mean, they do cause pain unless you have that prasada buddhi or unless that ajnanam, that self-ignorance, is removed so that the ananda is no longer projected out. If you're projecting yourself on the world, then you have to get it back somehow. It's not a very happy situation when you've lost yourself. And that's, even though you won't define it like that, that's exactly what the feeling is. I have to get my wholeness back, myself back. But this whole moha, This extraordinary moha, this extraordinary delusion, is really rooted in the self-ignorance, which allows for that projection. If there's self-ignorance, if knowledge is there, means if you know yourself, the projection itself becomes mithya. You know, that raga-dvesha itself becomes mithya. It becomes only a non-binding desire because it's not real. It's not real that your ananda is out there as something that you have to achieve. So once that's clear, once your buddhi is really well rooted in yourself, these desires are just part of maya. It's part of being alive. It's what allows you to go toward, you know, to have motivation to go toward things, but it's not your ananda, your happiness is not at stake. So the desires are actually just energy. It's energy, it's positive energy, unless it's backed by self-ignorance. So, what Krishna is saying after telling Arjuna all of these things, he comes up with his tasmat. Swamiji used to always use this word tasmat. All of this logic, everything is being said over and over and over, and this is how it is, and this is how it is, because of this, because of this, because of this, because of this. Tasmat. Therefore. So now we have the tasmat. Therefore. He says, tvam indriyani adau niyamya bharatarshabha. Bharatarshabha means the bull among the bharatas, the people of the bharata clan, and bull is always a symbol for the one who is, you know, the most strong, the most exalted. So it's like the bull among the bharata clan is the one who's the most exalted among the bharatas in the clan. So he says, hey bharatarshabha, he says, having restrained the indriyas, the organs of action, the mind, having restrained the mind and the sense organs. The sense organs, remember, the sense organs are the first ones where that kama exposes itself in the little fancy. So having restrained the indriyas adau in the first place, as soon as this little raga comes, you know, restraining, pulling back from that, pulling the kama as it begins, before it gets into this full-blown thing, pulling it back into your own hands right away. In adau means in the beginning, when this whole thing starts. Pulling it back into your own hands, then he says, papmanam prajahi enam jnana vijnana nashanam. Then Prajahi comes from actually, it's a nice construction, it's the lot. What's the lot called? Imperative. The imperative from prahan. Prahan means to destroy. So this goes through, han takes a lot of unusual construction. So prajahi is may you destroy, may you get rid of this pop manam, this one, who this poppy. All the karma is happening here. Karma is taking the blame. Now, we're all of the problems that we have, it's really because of these binding desires. It's because, and those karma itself is due to ajnana, to self-ignorance. But with the root cause of all of the problems that we have with each other and with the world, actually, is rooted in karma, because I need this to be happy. And I think getting a grip on what that means when you say, I need this to be happy, it is saying, I need this to be myself. That's what it is. And it's totally not okay to not be myself or to feel that myself is lost. And so the kama, the desire in forms of, in, whether it be raga or dvesha, you know, is giving me that sense of isolation from my own being, or loss of my own self. And so because of that, the karma can be override dharma. It has the power to override dharma, or to override all of the good qualities, the natural qualities that are the human qualities that you have when your mind isn't consumed by karma. But then the other side of it is this. The karma itself is not a problem until there's an obstruction to it. It's the obstruction that brings about the problem, you know? Because if it's just everything is free-flowing, that's a lot of energy, right? Kama itself is energy. So when there's no obstruction, I just have all of this energy going forward, gaining something that I want. But the problem is, so many little obstructions come along the way, which cause little krodhas. Krodha means anger. The whole, you know, the anger, the agitation, the frustration, all of these come along the way. And then, of course, when you are not successful in getting this desired object, then we have a big krodha, a big anger, you know, that then we have to live with. And so does everybody else. It's not just me. It's everybody else has to deal with this anger and take the brunt of it. And then they themselves become angry. They become angry because they have a desire, you know, to be liked, to be cared for, to be wanted. They have a dvesha toward people yelling at them or being angry at them. Who likes it? So somebody, say somebody is angry at you, do you say, you know, oh, thank you so much. Yeah, that's not the response. In fact, the response usually for me would be a thwarted desire. Right, so your anger at another person creates a thwarted desire for the other person, which creates their anger, and then we have this kind of domino effect. You know, and so even as in just a little aside, in therapy, as you're training to become a therapist or a psychologist, it's very essential actually that the therapist is actually able to contain that anger and that rage without giving it back. To be able to contain the anger and give back something else, you know, not to give back the anger, because then we're back in the world with this type of buildup of this anger creates this more anger, which creates more anger, which creates more anger. This is the kind of the situation that we get into even in politics, and, you know, one nation against another nation, or one team against another team. It's all, you know, an escalation of anger because of thwarted karma. And so karma is considered, the raga dvesha is considered the great, great enemy for bringing about discord and disruption and violence. People kill over their anger in relationships, when there's different kinds of abuse, and the woman often tries to run away from the man and he kills her. It's krodha. It's just, it's all kama. It's all kama krodha. It's an amazing, amazing thing. So that's why he doesn't mince words. He says papmanam. This kama is the great poppy, you know. If it's thwarted, if the kama is there and we have that prasada buddhi, I have self-knowledge, then kama, the kama is fine. There's no problem with it at all. Because I'm not asking it to do anything, you know, that is harmful. It just gives me energy. When I go through my life, it's nice to have something light up, you know. Like, this is good. This is what I want to do. That's energy, you know. But what if it gets thwarted? Then what? You know? For a jnani, that doesn't matter if it gets thwarted, because I can go around it. I can do it a different way. It's not a problem because nothing's at stake. There's nothing at stake. When there's nothing at stake, we can use that energy and enjoy those desires. And they make us, that's our prarabdha karma. Half of the prarabdha karma that motivates you to move is your prarabdha. I want to do this. I want to do that. It arises out of your unconscious. Remember the prarabdha karma, there's just three ways. What's going to get you moving? You know, what's going to be the impetus for you as a jiva to take you through the whole unfoldment of the prarabdha? Some part of it, one of the main things, is what arises up from your own psyche in the form of desire. What's coming up into your conscious mind as a desire? That can be the prarabdha karma. It's not just what I've, you know, picked up from the Joneses over here. You know, it actually can be what is motivating me is this birth that I have. The prarabdha can also be other people's desire. The motivation can be other people's desire, pulling you toward them into some sort of situation. But that's still kama. It's somebody else's kama that's pulling you toward them. Or somebody else's dvesha that's shooting you off in that way, you know? And it could also be just what the universe is doing, puts you into a situation. So there has to be motivators. There has to be energy that makes you move from your birth through your death. And kama has a lot to do with that energy. But that energy, how do we handle it? How do we handle it? Because the energy itself is in the form of kama is based in ajnanam until it's not. It's based in self-ignorance until it's not. And so a wise person, a bumukshu who comes to this knowledge is kama-ridden, right? Because, you know, it's not like you're an exception. No one is an exception to the forces of raga dvesha, unless you have knowledge. The only thing that abates it for an ajnani is dharma. And that's why the first part of the Vedas, the Karmakanda, puts such an emphasis on dharma. And of course the Hindu society, when it was really, contaminated by globalization, but when it was just more in its pure form, and still to this day in certain segments in India, the life is very, very regulated, you know, about what is proper behavior, what is dharmic behavior in this situation, in this stage of life, and what isn't. And the people themselves are kind of the guardians of that. Like, if you are behaving in a wrong way, you know, that is not going along with the well-known dharma of your caste and of your stage in life and the things that are expected of you, you know what their punishment is? I have to think of the word for this. I don't know why this word has left me, but I'll tell you what it is. You know when we pretend like you don't exist. It's not snubbing. What's that word?
Shunning.
That's the word. It's shunning. Do you know that? And animals do this too. Animals shun. After all, the elephants get shunned. You know, the monkeys, the chimpanzees get shunned. So it's in our genes, the shunning. But there's nothing worse. That's what they do shunning. So you're misbehaving. You're not following the dharma. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. We don't want you. We don't want you here. You don't exist for us. Yeah. And so that's kind of a very strong motivation to keep you on track, you know. fact, some really very, very close devotees of Swamiji's in Coimbatore, they lost the very, very close devotees, very, very instrumental in building up the whole ashram, very, also very dharmic, well, wonderful, wonderful people. But during some events that were happening in Coimbatore and with Swamiji, some celebrations that were going on that were important, the woman's father passed away. And the father was also very, very close in the family. But he passed away. And they're also very highly, very wealthy, influential people in the South. And so they... And they also have been studying with Swamiji for many, many years. So they also have knowledge and they're dharmic, wonderful people. But they couldn't leave their house for 2 weeks. Actually, they had to stay in the house for 2 weeks because it would be so upsetting to the community for them to not be doing the mourning properly, which had to do with you stay in your house and people bring the food and do everything, take care of everything, and you don't leave. You just stay in the house for 2 weeks and mourn. And that's just part of the whole ritual of mourning when somebody dies. So anyway, she was just mentioning that no, we don't dare come to the ashram now. It'll be too upsetting for too many people. That's really... Because they're all watching. Everybody's watching everybody else. In some ways it's so good, there's so much sharing going on, you know. But in another way, it's just keeping kind of a tight grip on everybody. I felt the same way for many years of being in the ashram in India, you know. Everybody is watching everybody else. Everybody knows. You know, we watch TV. Everybody in the West, you kind of watch TV, listen to music, and everybody just does what they want. But in India, TV is relatively recent. So they don't watch TV, they watch everybody else. Everybody knows exactly what everybody is doing. and there's a strong sense of dharma to this day. And so you have to stay in line with that, you know, or you're shunned in certain ways. Anyway. It's actually, I'm not exaggerating, it's how it is. So here, this raga dvesha, what controls it for an agnani, is really the dharma that's given to you by your family and by the society that allows you to kind of hold dharma. And also just by your life experience, dharma starts to become stronger, much stronger than the raga dvesha, and so that will control it for two reasons. One is because, or maybe the primary reason, not just my training and the societal constrictions, but also from my experience that dharma gives a much more powerful shanti than raga dvesha. And so that is what we call assimilation of experience that brings about a mind that becomes more and more available for this knowledge. But so, that being said, the raga dvesha, as it takes place, so what Krishna is now telling to Arjuna, you know, destroy it as it rises. Destroy it means what? Recognize what it is. Bring it back, you know. Recognize the raga for raga and the dvesha for dvesha. Recognize what it is. Bring it back into your hands. Don't let it take your buddhi. Because if you stick with it, if you're just following it, it will rob your buddhi. It'll take your buddhi away. And then you will end up in that buddhi nasha with that famous verse that we did. In the end, you'll lose all of your viveka, all of your discrimination. You won't know what is right and wrong. You'll be drowning in the raga. So pull it back. He says, pull it back into your own hands. That's how you destroy it, is you pull it back into your own hands. And he says, Pull back what? Anam, this, which is jnana vijnana nashanam. That's the problem. Pull back this kama, which is a nashana, which is something that destroys your knowledge and your vijnanam. Knowledge means what you've learned, all of the wisdom that you've learned, everything that you've been taught. in terms of right and wrong and good and bad. And Atma, Anatma also, the nature of yourself and the nature of the world, all of that gets clouded over, kind of covered by the karma, by the power of the karma. So don't let that buddhi-nasha take place. Don't let your knowledge and your vijnana be overwhelmed and covered, you know, even by smoke or by the dirt on the mirror, you know, or by the fetus in the womb, you know, these coverings that totally as though make your knowledge as though disappear, because the only thing that's in control now is the karma. So take action right in the beginning, he says. Let's go to the next one.
Indriyani
paranyahuh.
Indriyebhyah param manah.
Manasastu para buddhih.
Yo
buddhe paratastu saha. Indriyani parani ahuh. Indriyebhyah param manah. Manasastu para buddhih. Yaha buddhehe parataha tusaha. So now he says, ahuhu. It is said, we say that the indriyas, the sense organs, are parani, indriyani parani. The sense organs are superior to the physical body. What they mean, because we're going to go into this kind of a hierarchical, this is superior to this, this is superior to this, this is superior to this. What they mean by superior is that the physical body is the most objectified. In other words, through my sense organs, it's because of my sense organs that I know this physical body. And so there's a subject-object relationship between the sense organs and the physical body, and so the subject is closer to me than the object in that sense. And also, my indriyas, the sense of touch and the eyes, but especially the sense of touch, these indriyas, they belong to the sukshma sharira, to the subtle body, and they pervade this physical body. So in terms of pervasiveness, in terms of pervasiveness, and then in terms of being innermost, subject to object innermost, the indriyas are paraha, considered superior to the body, to the deha. So indriyani parani ahuhu, they say. Then they say, indriyebhyah param manaha. But the mind is superior to the sense organs, because the mind is innermost. The mind is innermost, the subject of the sense organs, in the sense that my sense organs are aware of my body, but my mind is aware of the sense organs. And also, so subject-object, now I'm innermost, as the mind is. Also, the mind is more pervasive. And in fact, the mind, the sense organs are just tools that the mind uses. If the mind is not attached or function or engaged with the sense organs are just there waiting, they're inactive. The mind itself can do many other things on a subtle level, many other things without even the use of the sense organs. I have imagination, I have thought, I have memory, you know, I have interior experiences, I can do inner travel, so I'm much more pervasive, and I have much more capacity, in a sense, than the sense organs. The sense organs are just tools. Also, they're tools, they're objects, right? And even the mind has to use the sense organs for the sense organs to do what they do. So we say that the sense organs is innermost to the deha, to the body, subject to object, but the sense organs don't even work without the mind. So the mind needs to utilize those. So it's viewed as interior, closer to me, because subject to object, I'm aware of my sense organs, whether they're working or not. And so they become interior and more pervasive, and so in that way, superior. And then it says, manasahatu para buddhihi. The buddhi is superior to the manas, because the manas is, after all, something which the buddhi is aware of and can control. I can do inner child work with the manas. I'm the one who can objectify. If you take the two vrittis here, one is the buddhi. Say if I have like a dukkha vritti, you know, a sorrowful thought. The buddhi can come in, actually dividing in a sense into subject object the dukkha. It can come in, that type of buddhi vritti, that type of vritti can come in and objectify the emotion, or objectify the thought, or objectify even the fluctuating mind. So the buddhi is able to objectify experience and to act upon experience. It's like a manasa karma. I can decide with this fluctuating mind, the buddhi can say, you know, let's do an exercise now, you know, to help the fluctuating mind gain some shanti. Let's do some pranayama. Let's do some japa. Let's do some inner child work. So the buddhi directs all of this. The buddhi is the one that is decisive, that really carries the knowledge, carries the understanding, and is then able to control or act upon the manas. So even with raga dvesha, it's the buddhi that comes in, you know, bringing in the knowledge to decide how are we going to deal with this raga dvesha. And then the buddhi, when it is trained, or even the buddhi, trained buddhi, the buddhi that has knowledge, has the tools that it needs to handle the things that the manas is doing, or the things that are going on in the unconscious. The buddhi is able to go into the unconscious, do that inner child work, be the one who holds and comforts. So the buddhi, you know, is innermost to the manas. All the manas can do in reference to the buddhi is when it gets overwhelmed, when the manas is an overwhelmed emotion, that emotion can, like kind of like a tidal wave, come and just drown the buddhi temporarily until it's pulled back out into the sea. When it's drowning, as though overwhelming and drowning the buddhi, then the buddhi now is speaking from the manas. Speaking, its clarity and decisiveness is there, but it's like a mithya clarity, like a mithya jnanam. It's a jnanam or a clarity that is speaking for the emotion, you know? The speaking out of anger, or speaking out of anger, or speaking out of irritation, you know, or speaking out of sorrow, or speaking out of deep depression. So it becomes the voice of that, you know? A buddhi that has strength of knowledge, strong knowledge, nishta, even when the mind is overwhelmed, that little corner, the buddhi has its own little corner that can then divide that overwhelming emotion or that overwhelming anger, can split itself up from that and can come in and say, you are really angry, or you are really agitated. The instant it does that, and the buddhi can do this. So even when it's overwhelmed, if it's trained, it'll say, I'm overwhelmed. Instead of acting out of the overwhelm, it'll say, I'm overwhelmed. What's really bothering you? That subject-object relationship. So the buddhi is tremendously powerful in that way because it directs, it can direct with its knowledge how the raga dvesha is to be handled. You know, how the manas and the emotions, what is the most healing way to handle them? How to take care of the body. It's all because it's the knowledge holder. And so the buddhi itself is the one that actually frees us. The one who gains knowledge, right, that makes sense of everything else. And so what the buddhi has to gain knowledge that makes sense of the totality of my experience in terms of self-knowledge, it makes sense of the totality of my experience, including its own experience. Right? Because the buddhi also is mithya, and the buddhi is also aware of itself. Right? The mind is amazing like this. You can have a subject-object relationship with any vritti that you have. You know, say you even have a jnana vritti, a knowledge vritti, the buddhi. The buddhi can come in and comment on that. Right? So any any experience that you have, the buddhi can objectify that experience. The manas doesn't do that. The manas is just experiences. But the buddhi can objectify experience, comment on it, and if the and to whatever degree the jnanam is there, you know, can act upon it in a way that is very, very healing. So the one that is gaining knowledge here, self-knowledge, is the buddhi. It's the buddhi. The atma doesn't have self-knowledge. The atma doesn't need self-knowledge. For the atma, there's no duality. From the standpoint of me, there is no subject-object relationship. It's just simply my being. And my being is the one because of whom this whole creation has come, the one because of whom the buddhi has come, and the manas and the whole system of this body-mind-sense organs that belongs to Ishvara. That whole thing is something that has come from the atma. So here he says, so the buddhi, manasaha tu para buddhi, the buddhi is superior to the manas, but buddhehe parataha saha, but that is superior, that one is superior to the buddhi. And who is that one? That one is the atma, the paramatma, the self that you are, is superior to the buddhi. Because again, innermost, the buddhi also is maya, it's also mithya. It's something which is objectified. It's something that is bound by change. It exists in the creation. It's part of the manifest creation. So who, what is the self and innermost to the buddhi? It's me, it's the atma. And so then to understand the beauty of that, with the mind, and the buddhi understands that, then it starts to recognize who I am. Because there's no one else behind the buddhi. See, if you think like this, like behind the body, superior to the body are the sense organs. Right? So they become as though the atma to the body, as though the subject. But then superior to the sense organs is the manas. The manas is what, you know, the manas pervades the sense organs, it utilizes the sense organs, gains the vrittis from the sense organs, and is pervasive and freer because of imagination and all of these things. But the buddhi is superior and the self of the manas, because the buddhi can direct the manas, can control the manas, is innermost to the manas, is the one that has knowledge. But that buddhi, what is behind it? What is behind that one? A fly is behind. What is behind that one? Is the self. And what is the nature of the self? It's the Satchitananda Atma. It's the very Ananda, the very fullness, the very being that I actually am. My sense of me is not from the body, mind, sense organs. My sense of me, the one who is ever present to every vritti I have, that this is my thought, this is my emotion, this is my hurt, this is my trauma. These are my little ones. This my. That's me, right? The my resolves into me, into the I. But who is that I? That every single thought, all along the way, without exception, equally enjoys. All dukkha vrittis, all sukha vrittis, all cognitions, it doesn't matter what it is. All emotions, the fluctuating mind, the clarity of the buddhi, all of those belong to me in the sense that this I, the conscious being that makes me me, is there present to all of them. They all negate each other. You have this thought, then it's replaced by this thought. You know, you have this emotion, it's replaced by this emotion. You're never replaced. You never feel replaced. You just said, oh, this emotion has finally passed and now this is a little better. I'm feeling better, right? But it's always me. It's never somebody else. And you identify because of ajnanam, you identify yourself with the experiences. I'm sick today. I'm so tired today. Your body is tired, you know. Your body is tired. Your body is feeling sick. But that's not what we feel. I am sick. My mind is so agitated. I am agitated, you know. That's because of ajnanam. I want this. I need this. I need this so that I can be happy. Right? That's because of ajnanam, that self-ignorance. That's not That's a buddhi that still does not know itself, who I am. Because I don't need to fulfill a desire to be happy. I am the happiness which the mind enjoys when I have a shantavritti. But I don't even need a shantavritti. I don't need a shantavritti because my own nature is full and complete. If the whole universe went away and all the shantavrittis went away, would I become sad? I wouldn't become sad because I'm the very ananda, the wholeness that the wholeness that the whole universe enjoys, you know, but only experiences in terms of identification from these little leshas, these little dots of shantavrittis. Shantavritti is nothing, just little moments of ananda. But there's something if that's all you've got. That's what it is, though. If that's all you've got, it's certainly better than nothing, you know? No, seriously. And say, and you're dependent on having these little shantavrittis from fulfilling your desires, which have nothing to do with ananda, except for the delusion that by my gaining that, I will be happy. And so what happens when you gain that? Your mind has a shantavritti, because you had projected the ananda on it, and then when you get it, your mind feels, ah. So a shantavritti takes place, and the ananda of yourself is not blocked by the different irritations in your mind. But the shantavritti and the person or the object has nothing to do with it, other than the delusion of you projecting the ananda onto that object, going after it, winning it, and feeling a great release in the mind. And so the shantavritti, out of this delusion, total delusion, the shantavritti is created. Do you see that? Because you thought it would make you happy, you projected that on it, you get the thing, and so your mind, which is so stressed trying to get this thing, to win this thing over, to get it, that stressed mind, so focused on fulfilling that desire, is released. The instant you get it. And so at that instant, when you satisfy that desire, you are like a Mahatma. Because you have no desire at that moment. You have to give the desire a few minutes to next one to arise. So for the moment, you're a desirelessness. You have no desire. That's the ananda that you're experiencing. The desirelessness that a jnani always experiences. Because the jnani isn't going through this circuitous route of having something light up, going after it, working to get it, going through all of the obstructions to get it, finally getting your hands on it, boom, shantavritti. Okay, all is well with me. Until the next desire arises. And the next desire will arise because there is no ananda out there. The only ananda that you experienced was because of this shantavritti that only is very, very time-bound. And so then it's time, then we have to do this whole thing again and again and again and again and again from beginningless time until we realize something's wrong. It doesn't work. That's a huge realization. This does not work. It can't be just this. It cannot be like this. This isn't right. Because it's not right, because when I am with myself, I know that's me. When these agitations or whatnot, when I have a break from them, you know, and my mind is just all is well with me, I know myself. I know this is who I am, and I know this is what I'm supposed to be. It's not just a thought, you know what I mean? The fullness of yourself, the wholeness of yourself is just not your idea. Like, yeah, they tell me that there's some fullness and I'm supposed to be that. No, it isn't that. You know very well that when you have those moments of peace and all is well with me, that this is you, you know? And maybe you remember these experiences. I have this couple of really big ones where I remember because there was just some resolution for some reason, and I know this is who I am. It's very, this is who I am. And then it started going away, you know, started going away, and I couldn't get it back. I tried to catch it somehow. I tried to stop my mind. I tried to make it stay. I could not make it stay, and it went away. And then I felt sad because I wanted to get it back, and I didn't know how to get it back. I really didn't know how to get it back. Probably the more I thought about it, the worse it got. More stress, more tension. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that you know. It's not that you don't know. You just don't know how to get it, where it is. Because the anyonya adhyasa, the superimposition with the mind, is so absolutely thorough. Because the mind, body, sense organs, whole creation is all mithya. It's like the dream. You're totally enclosed in this duality. And you don't know that the mind by its very nature, everything that is sattva by its very nature, is continually changing and continually enjoying me, right? Because it's sattva. And so there's no way for me to kind of break out of this duality until the Upanishads come along and really hold up a mirror. That's the whole teaching is such a pramana. It's a means of knowledge for mumukshus who are ready to know what's really going on here. And you don't need to know this until you need to know it. You know, because until you need to know, the reason you don't need to know for since beginningless time, because you still feel like if I just got the right combination of things, fulfilled the right amount of desires, did the right type of work and all of this, you know, and get the right setup, you know, have this and then have this, the right setup, I will be happy, all will be well with me. You know, and we just go along like that. But it doesn't, it will never pan out. And at some time, we realize that this self that I know I am, you know, that's so evasive, you know, I can't get from this. The one that I know I am, I can never get from this. I can only get moments, little glimpses, that's all. And I start to realize the reality of that, and at the same time, it's not that you haven't had deep recognition of your own being. See what I mean? So it really becomes an important little issue. So that Atma, so he says, that Atma, notice that Atma, is innermost even to the self. I mean, even to the buddhi. So let's do this last verse.
Evam buddhe param buddhva samstadhyatmanam atmana jahi shatrum mahabaho kamarupam durasadam.
So now, having recognized this kind of sequence of superiority ending with the Atma, he says, in this manner, buddhehe param buddhva, having understood, having seen, having recognized that which is param, superior to the buddhi, in this manner, the Atma, which is superior, innermost to the buddhi, so having recognized this, then what? Stamstabhya atmanam atmana. Then, having made samstha, means having made firm and steady, atmanam here is atmanam is the manas. Remember, atma can be used in so many ways. So atmanam is the manas. Having made steady and giving shanti to the manas, atmana, by the buddhi, because the buddhi now has recognized, it has gained this knowledge. It has gained the knowledge of the self. It recognizes the self as innermost. So having known that param, that which is innermost and superior to the buddhi itself, your atma, having recognized in this manner, then having calmed down, having made steady the manas, the one that's all this emotional turmoil and all of this doubt, all of this stuff that's going on, having the buddhi, having that manas be made steady and calm and quiet by the buddhi, then he says, hey Mahabaho, destroy, bring to an end the shatru in the form of kama, this enemy, which is in the form of kama, whose nature is kama, which itself is durasadam. It is so difficult to know, to get your hands on this kama. It's very difficult to even understand it because it's multi and varied. Kama is coming up in every way, your likes and your dislikes, and your dislikes of your dislikes. So kama is so all pervasive because it's kind of the gasoline that keeps you going, that keeps you moving. It's good energy for a jnani who has the atma, who has your buddhi and the kama in it, in your hands. It's good energy then. But when it's going after your ananda because of self-ignorance, it can be, you know, very damaging, very hurtful to us, especially when the raga is not fulfilled. Or unfulfilled raga is krodha. The unfulfilled positive desire, positive energy, I want this, gives me energy to move toward things, that becomes corrupted into krodha, into anger, because I'm not getting what I desire. And the problem is that it's a binding desire, means that because of self-ignorance, my ananda is projected on it. So even for a person, a dharmi, a dharmanishta, really good person, who's very mature and has still with that dharma, that krodha, that their thwarted desires, they still have thwarted desires. It's not prasada buddhi, they're not jnanis. They just are dharmanishtas. But still, the kama can be thwarted. Their desires can be thwarted, which creates anger. And then they somehow have to deal within dharma. They have to hang on to their anger, or swallow their anger, or swallow their agitation, or do something with it, because it's not going to not be there. Dharma isn't enough to stop, you know, the effects of thwarted desire. It will help to control it so that you're not acting out on it, but it doesn't get rid of it. So what he says is, now knowing this, having that karma yoga buddhi, which this whole chapter 3 is really on that karma yoga buddhi, all the ins and outs of it, that's what this chapter is. So knowing this, understanding this, bring this, destroy this kama, means remove the power from it. Keep it in your hands. Just make a decision. Do I really want to go after this desire if it's there or not? Is it good for me? It is not, or it's not good for me. If it's not good for me, then let me just let it go. Have that shama and dhamma. You know, build up the shama and dhamma so you have some control on whether you're going to act out on the kama or not. And as these kamas, in the light of your knowledge, these kamas themselves start dropping off, because you're the flood, you know, the ananda. Your ananda is the flood that is already in flooding. You don't need to walk out to the middle of the well, the middle of the flood, to get to the well to get the water. You are the ananda, and so you don't have any real desire to do all of this to get out into a well that you're already flooded with the water. It doesn't make any sense. So these kamas and raga dveshas, they actually really drop off. They're not something that interesting to you, because I don't have to do anything for my ananda. So why do I even need raga dvesha? It's better, it's much happier to just be with Ishwara, enjoying myself, to be with Ishwara. Be with the prarabdha karma as it's unfolding. Do my dharma within that prarabdha karma. That's the life of a jnani, simply doing what's here to be done, because I'm no longer searching for ananda. Changes everything. Raga, dvesha, kama has its roots in ajnana, in self-ignorance. Once the ananda, the buddhi discovers the ananda as my own being, then what is the raga dvesha? What is it for? You know? So it drops off, you don't need it. you like being here. You know, you like being here with your life, with Ishwara. That's what's fun. And it's easy because you already have it. The one great thing about the Prarabdha Karma, you already have it. It's here. Like Swamiji says, we used to say frequently, you know, if it's yours, if it's yours, you'll get it. And if it's not yours, you won't. Simple. Mm-hmm. What's to worry about then? Especially since no ananda is at stake. So you can just really be with Ishwara. The thing that takes away that Ishwara buddhi is the jiva srishti, is kama. That's all. Kama, it's born of ajnana, but even for an ajnani, no self-knowledge. There's those times, like when you're walking in the park or in nature, or, you know, your little child or your pet or something is giving you a big, you know, hug, big smile. There's a... it's our food. giving a big big smile or whatever. You know, you don't want anything else. You just want to be where you are. Right? So many times, even if with ajnanam, things are just, they're beautiful. You just want to be there with what is. That's the state, that's what ajnani is. You just want to be there with what is. You know, because you're not no longer searching for ananda, so that Ishwara drishti, that Ishwara, natural Ishwara drishti, being with Ishwara, appreciating this as Ishwara, is there for you. That's what it is. For an ajnani, when you're taking a beautiful walk in nature and just looking around, that Ishwara drishti is there, you know, where you just have this sense of wonder and sense of Ishwara, sense of God, the beauty of the whole creation. That is overwhelmingly there. But you only get that once in a while because you enjoy the grace and the beauty of that, but then you have to put yourself in situations where the raga dvesha are at bay for the time being. But whenever they're at bay, you know, whenever they're quiet, then that Ishwara buddhi is there. Even you talk about it in different ways. But it's like a gift from Bhagavan that you get to experience that which is actually what is yours to always experience once we remove that ajnanam. So that is our task, and that is what we are doing. So Om Tat Sat. So we're able to finish that chapter. Yes, beautiful. Mm-hmm. I'm happy. Even though I would have been willing to have two or three verses left over, but I was glad we could finish it.
Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.